I'm Rob Tribble, flagship station of Atlanta United. 1-1 tie yesterday up in New York. Got a point. Let's go out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome on 92.9 The Game. Anchor, reporter, podcast host of soccer down here. My friend and yours, one Jarrett Smith, joins us. Jarrett, what are you doing on this Sunday? Aren't you out by the pool somewhere drinking?
Kind of. Mexican restaurant drinking count for you?
You're at a Mexican restaurant day drinking?
I mean,
that's
Sunday,
outstanding.
Right?
I'll be doing that in like an hour, hopefully. So, all right. Big takeaway from you. Here's what I think, and I could be wrong. I'm not as sophisticated in the matters of soccer like you and Jason Longshore and all those guys. I certainly get it to a great degree. I'm a member of the faction. I go to basically all home games. But it seemed like yesterday, after Atlanta United scored, there was a lapse in intensity on their part. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it seemed like they kind of shut off. And once they got that lead, they kind of took the foot off the gas a little bit. And it's something that that they haven't done much of. You've seen them keep the foot on. And then the concern traditionally has been they just can't seem to finish chances, but they're still creating them. They had one or two chances after that yesterday, but it seemed like NYC decided they were going to just start playing downhill, and Atlanta was playing in mud and just could not string anything together and just got pinned back on New York City's field, which no one's even gotten a point there this year before Atlanta went up and did it. But, yeah, it certainly felt like after that goal, they let off just a little bit, and in a tug of war, you let off just a little bit, and you're sent flying sometimes.
Yeah, talk about, you know, the dimensions up there of that field at Yankee Stadium. It's like they have to shoehorn the soccer field into it. How much of a difference does that make? How much could it compromise a team like Atlanta United? Not giving them an excuse, but there is a reality there, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely a reality, and especially with a team like Atlanta that likes to play wide. They like to spread the field out. It's why Mercedes-Benz is built the way it is and why it works for Atlanta, and why plays like Montpellier Wednesday night in Columbus will work. It's wider. NYCFC's field at Yankee Stadium is, in theory, to standard, but that might be stretching it a little bit. With the field being as narrow as it is, Atlanta can't spread things out as much. You know, Julian Gressel has that beautiful assist where he drops a dime right on Joseph Martinez's head, but it's so hard for him to get out wide. It's so hard for Barco or Mikey Ambrose to get out wide and create the width and kind of try and stretch apart that New York defense. What Atlanta likes to do, they like to spread you out. They like to stretch out the defense and then let Joseph Martinez or Ezequiel Barco or Miguel Almiron just make these knife-cutting runs like a knife through hot butter right through the middle of your defense, and you can't do it when you're all bunched in.
Talk about the effort of Brad Guzan yesterday. Outshot 25-6 on the day. He was standing on his head if he were a hockey goalie. He was nothing short of phenomenal.
Yeah, that's the kind of performance that that you look for in the playoffs and that Atlanta dealt with last year in the playoffs with Zach Steffen at Columbus.
Yeah.
That was insane. I mean, he set the pace of everything with the first save on the breakaway where he just sticks that paw out there. And Guzan's a big guy anyway. He's got long limbs, sticks that paw out there, knocks the ball away, and then continue to just make big save after big save. And it's one of those things you talked about hockey goalies. When you're in a groove, and there's not much anyone's going to do to stop you once you get in that groove. He already distributes the ball well. He commands the back line very well. When Brad Guzan's on one like he was yesterday, I mean, it's hard not to call him, you know, hard not to put his name in the conversation on those days as the best keeper in MLS all around.
Miguel Almiron, a shoulder injury. What do we know right now?
We don't know a ton right now, still waiting for word, but it sounds like Tata Martino said after the game, didn't seem like it was too serious, brought him out. He was kind of favoring it a bit, but I think the fact he was able to keep going in the first half was a good sign. We'll just have to see what they say. With the game coming up Wednesday, we'll kind of know then about, you know, how bad it is or, you know, how good it might be in terms of the news we get. He and Joseph both picked up knocks. Looked like, I thought Joseph was going to be the one to come off, and it turns out it's Almiron who comes off. But I think we'll just have to wait and see how it, you know, how it progresses in the week. We'll hear it practice this week, and then I would expect him, you know, I would expect him to, considering he was able to keep going, I'd expect him to be out there.
All right, Tata Martino getting a little bit of criticism. I'm looking on the blogosphere. They played that 3-5-2 formation yesterday, and it looks like once again, a large majority of possessions were given up, and New York was getting a lot of good looks. What's your take on that situation?
I mean, you're working with what you got there. It's he's got a couple different clubs in his bag that he can use now. That 3-5-2 is a different look. You've seen it a lot this year. They've broken out that 4-2-3-1 that we saw all last year a couple times. It's been weird situations. It didn't work in Houston. Houston, you kind of write off at this point because that looks more like not who Atlanta was than what we see week in and week out. And then you had to get out of it in the Kansas City match when Brad Guzan gets sent off after decking somebody, sending him into the next county basically with a tackle. But I think it's one of those things where he sees the opportunity to, we're not really going to press, we're not going to try and get to the field against a team like New York. And I would prefer to see the 4-2-3-1, and maybe we see it come back. He might be more comfortable playing it when he's got Tito Vijava healthy, where he can put Vijava on the right wing and Barco on the left and have Vijava just bombing down the right, because when he's on, you know, there's maybe a handful of players in this league who can stay with him. It might just be a matter of getting guys 100% healthy and finding the right matchups. But the fact that he can go to a couple different formations, it's nice to have that flexibility.
I've been sitting on this story for a while. We've been hearing that Barco might be a target for Argentina due to injuries in the World Cup. Soccer Down South came out with it yesterday. What is the status of that? Is he going to go play for Argentina in the World Cup?
I haven't seen anything definitive. I've heard he might or he will not. I haven't seen anything about it. He absolutely will. I'd have to double check again, but as of right now, I wouldn't. Stranger things have happened, but I wouldn't necessarily expect that he, you know, wasn't called into camp. I don't think they've had him into any of the camps. So it would be, it'd be surprising if it happened, but I would, if I had to play, if you asked me to place money on it, I'd say it probably doesn't happen.
All right. As far as, clearly this roster has some, coveted pieces by teams around the world. Looks like Miguel Almirón is probably going to be gone after this year. How long can we expect Barco to hang around? Will they come after Brad Guzan too?
Guzan, I don't think so. I mean, there's always a chance somebody could, Barco, I would give him, you know, I would expect him to be here through the end of this year, you know, maybe through the summer of next year. It just depends on how he continues to progress. Atlanta's going to want, considering what they paid for him, they're going to want a really nice return for him. Miguel Almirón, there's no way to tell. It's easy to say right now, hey, Miguel Almirón's going to be here through the end of the season. Well, if somebody in the summer window pops up and says, we'll give you $30 million for Miguel Almirón, you're sitting down at the table with him.
Indeed.
And same thing, if someone comes to the table and says, hey, we'll give you $15 or $20 million for Joseph Martinez, you're sitting down at the table and talking. It just depends on what happens. There's no real way to predict the Wild West that is transfer season.
Yeah.
For now, you'll see Atlanta's name pop up in the news. That's just gonna happen. But you just gotta kind of grin and bear it, and just kind of play through it, and continue to try and churn out results while you can.
He's about five margaritas in at the local Mexican restaurant. He's 92.9 The Game anchor, reporter, podcast host of Soccer Down Here. Jared Smith joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. All right, as good as things are right now, you're leading the Eastern Conference. I think you have more points than any team in the MLS. What are the vulnerabilities of this team that you see that could maybe compromise them in the playoffs?
Looking at this team right now, I mean, it's the passing in the back every now and then. You know, they'll have those games where they get a little clumsy in the back. We saw it against Red Bulls and the home match a couple of weeks ago, where they kind of struggled. They kind of struggled in that home match with, you know, just a couple of moments of distribution, and those couple of moments ended up hurting them. Aside from that, the only other thing is you wonder if things start going against them again, like we saw in the Red Bulls match, where everything kind of started to twist on them a bit. They got a bad call here or there, and all of a sudden, you know, you start to see the demeanor change. So they've got to continue to prove that if things go wrong, they're not going to crumble mentally. And I think they'll make those improvements. They've got the veterans on the squad to keep making those improvements, but that's something to keep an eye on.
All right, give me a scouting report. What can we look forward to on Wednesday night up there in Columbus against the Crew, who's also ranked pretty highly out west?
Yeah, so the Crew got rid of a couple guys in the summer window, in the winter window, excuse me. And I didn't really know what to make of them. They just keep churning out, you know, victories and draws and really tough draws. They still got a lot of really good players up there, and the system they run, everyone just buys into it. They'll take advantage of their chances. Atlanta went up there and got a point last year, though. So I think for Atlanta, you know, this is a match where you look at it and go, we went up there last year when I think they were a more dangerous team last year. You went up there and took 3 points from them at home. I think you have to feel like you can go do it again. And if you do and you get 4 points out of these two games, you are over the moon if you're Atlanta.
Oh, indeed. All right, let's look to the world stage. Now we have this Ghana referee bribery scandal. About 100 officials were bribed. One of them was going to be an official for the World Cup. Is this World Cup going to be a hot mess of chaos and corruption?
I mean, maybe. I think the question we had for a while there was, they're having VAR at the World Cup, and we were wondering, you know, it's different if you use VAR to mess up a call in an Atlanta United match or a, you know, a New York match or an LA Galaxy match. It's a whole different kettle of fish if you use VAR and you get a call wrong, but it's Argentina.
It's an international incident that could lead to war.
Yeah, we're talking about a country absolutely going nuts and flipping cars in the streets like Vancouver at a playoff hockey game. But it might be a hot mess. I mean, I think the game on the field will still be fun, though. And I think we get into these, and every year we freak out about you know, what's going to happen, what's not going to happen. And at the end of the day, I think the game on the field will be entertaining and fun, and it will kind of overshadow the games off the field. As long as it's nothing, you know, too insane in that moment, then they'll deal with it afterward.
All right, Jerry, we got about 30 seconds left. Who's your favorite in the World Cup, and who could be a dark horse?
I'm going to go with Tata Martino's philosophy, which is that every year in the World Cup, we always talk about which country can or can't win it, who's going to be good, who's not going to be good. He said, and Germany's always there at the end of the day, so there's always Germany to consider. I would love to see Argentina win it just to give Messi a World Cup title as his career is starting to wind down.
All right, well, there you have it. Godspeed, my friend. That's Jared Smith, everybody.